Khadija was probably in her late 30s when she married Muhammad and bore him at least 6 children. Their 2 sons, Al-Qasim and Abdullah, died in infancy. But Muhammad adored his daughters, Zainab, Ruqayya, Kulthum and Fatima. It was a happy household, even though Muhammad insisted on giving a high proportion of their income to the poor. He also brought 2 needy boys into the family. On their wedding day, Khadija had presented him with a young slave called Zayd ibn al-Harith from one of the northern tribes. He became so attached to his new master that when his family came to Mecca with the money to ransom him, Zayd begged to be allowed to remain with Muhammad, who adopted him and gave him his freedom. A few years later, Abu Talib was in such financial trouble that Muhammad took his 5-year-old son, Ali, into his household to ease his burden. He was devoted to both boys and treated them as his own sons. We know very little about these early years, but from his later career, it is clear that he had accurately diagnosed the malaise that was particularly rife among the younger generation, who felt ill at ease in this aggressive market economy. The Quraysh had introduced class distinctions that were quite alien to the tribal ideal. Almost as soon as they had seized control of Mecca, the wealthier Quraysh had lived beside the Kaaba, while the less prosperous inhabited the suburbs and the mountainous region outside the city. The Quraysh had abandoned the Badawa virtue of generosity and become niggardly, except that they called this shrewd business sense. Some no longer succumbed to the old fatalism because they knew that they had succeeded in turning their fortunes around. They even believed that their wealth could give them some kind of immortality. Others took refuge in a life of hedonism, making a religion out of pleasure. Increasingly, it seemed to Muhammad that the Quraysh had jettisoned the best and retained only the worst aspects of Muruwa, the tribal code. The recklessness, arrogance and egotism that were morally destructive and could bring the city to ruin. He was convinced that social reform must be based on a new spiritual solution, or it would remain superficial. He probably realised at some deep level that he had exceptional talent, but what could he do? Nobody would take him seriously, because, despite his marriage to Khadija, he had no real status in the city. There was widespread spiritual restlessness. The settled Arabs, who lived in the towns and agricultural communities of the Hejaz, had developed a different kind of religious vision. They were more interested in gods than the Bedouin, but their rudimentary theism had no strong roots in Arabia. Very few mythical stories were told about the various deities. Allah was the most important god and was revered as the lord of the Kaaba, but he was a remote figure and had very little influence on the people's daily lives. Like the other high gods or sky gods, who were a common feature of ancient religion, Allah had no developed cult and was never depicted in effigy. Everybody knew that Allah had created the world, that he quickened each human embryo in the womb, and that he was the giver of rain. But these remained abstract beliefs. Arabs would sometimes pray to Allah in an emergency, but once the danger had passed, they forgot all about him. Indeed, Allah seemed like an irresponsible absentee father. After he had brought men and women into being, he took no interest in them and abandoned them to their fate.